Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A few years ago, we borrowed several electric cars from Duke Energy's fleet to test drive them for a show that we were going to do about electric cars and so that we could talk about them and what they had to offer. At the time, the adoption of this technology seemed light years away, and these cars felt like the province of early adopters, tech geeks, and the well-heeled. That is no longer the case. With Tesla leading the way, electric cars are now coming into the mainstream. Almost every major manufacturer has at least one form of an electric vehicle in their 2022 or 23 lineup, and at least one manufacturer promises to be all electric by 2030. That's not that far down the road. Recently, we took a deeper dive into this new age of automobiles, focusing on how they would impact the industry and what kind of infrastructure would be needed to ensure their practicality. But today, let's look at the cars themselves and everything you need to know about them to decide if now is the time to experience this new age of driving. After all, if you think you'll be driving for the next 15 or 20 years, you will likely be doing so at some point in an electric car. And if you're just starting your driving experience, you most certainly have an electric car in your future. Just like the early days of computers, people have tons of questions about this new technology and may feel they don't know enough to ask the right question. So let's answer as many questions as we can and provide as much information as we can to dispel any mysteries surrounding electric propulsion. We're joined this hour by Ben Sullins. If you are interested in electric cars, you've probably spent some time on YouTube watching enthusiasts talk about them, but no one does it quite like Ben, a data scientist. He worked in the tech field for almost 2 years, or two decades, excuse me, before quitting his corporate job to make YouTube videos about electric cars. Why didn't I think of that? He also played a role in putting together an app called TesLab, which helps Tesla owners track data on just about every aspect of their cars and every trip that they take. And in addition to YouTube, his videos can be found on bensullins.com, where he frees the data on many topics, among them electric cars. Thank you for joining us from California, where it's very early in the morning. Good morning.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for having me. You know, I've got kids, so I don't sleep. So
okay. Jess Montgomery is also with us. He's president of the Charlotte Electric Auto Association, a group of electric car owners and enthusiasts. He's also a leader of the Charlotte Tesla Owners Enthusiast Group. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
And David Borax is WFAE's climate reporter, but he's been doing a series on the FAQ City podcast about electric vehicles, answering listener questions about them, and he joins us as well. Good morning, David.
Hello, Mike.
I want to tackle a lot of different things, and we want to get your questions as we go through the show. You can email them at charlottetalks@wfae.org or tweet them at Charlotte Talks. And a reminder that we will be leaving the air on the radio at about 9:30 for the Supreme Court, but we will continue on Facebook. When I was considering making the move to an electric car, which I did about 2 years ago, the big question in my mind and the big worry in my mind was range anxiety. Does that remain, Jess, the big bugaboo for people thinking about or not thinking about making the leap?
It's definitely one of those considerations, Mike. But now we have a lot of cars that get at least 300 miles. It's really not so much a factor anymore, but to your point, it definitely was some time ago, but the technology has really come around so that it's becoming less and less of an issue.
And the source of that range anxiety, which I experienced because I picked my car up in Washington and had to drive it at night back to North Carolina for the very first time ever. And it's the idea that you just can't stop anywhere on the interstate and fill up the tank with gasoline. That's the big bugaboo. But as I've owned it, I have discovered that range anxiety is a figment of my imagination. And Ben, you own two electric vehicles and no gasoline cars. How does that impact your life?
Well, really, the only time that comes into play, Mike, is when we're going on a road trip and it happens to be, you know, fairly long distance, like 500 plus miles. Otherwise, it's actually far more convenient, right? I get up in the morning and my car has been charging overnight, just like my cell phone, and I'm good to go. So I never have to stop for gas. I never have to go do any of those things I used to do. So the majority of the time, it's really convenient. The only time it comes up is when it's going, when you're on some kind of long distance trip. And maybe if you're in an area you know, it's easy. But if you're going somewhere that's unfamiliar to you, or maybe you're in Texas where, you know, the spans between cities can be quite large, that's where I think it creeps in a little bit more. But as Jess was saying, thankfully the cars now are really kind of efficient in high range. So it definitely is becoming less and less of an issue. But again, the vast majority of the time, like you mentioned Tesla, in our data, we see that 90%+ of the time people are charging at home. So really, overall, it's a huge savings in terms of time and effort. The only time is when you go on these long distance trips.
Is that a question that comes up a lot in this FAQ City podcast that you're doing? Range, how far can I go? How much of a problem is it? Because people don't realize that it's much more convenient to charge at home than have to stop at a gas station and fill up.
Yeah, Mike, I've been talking to a lot of EV owners, and I am not one yet, by the way, but I am searching right now. Yeah, I'll get there. Don't worry. My car gets 40 miles to the gallon. I'm happy at the moment. But I have been talking to a lot of folks, and that is the big concern when people come into it. But a lot of the electric vehicle owners that I talk to say once they became owners, as you just mentioned, you know, the idea of range anxiety kind of melts away. And, you know, one stat that might be useful for people is, you know, think about how much you drive every day. For most drivers, it's in the 35 mile range. And that's just not going to get you into any trouble. As Ben mentions, you know, people worry about those trips. But, you know, if we're in now in the time when cars get, you know, 300, 400 mile range, that'll get you as far as you would on a tank of gas. Now, the big difference is that charging that you have to build into your trip. And what people tell me is, you know, I just use the app on my car or on my phone and it points me to a charging station. And, you know, assuming you can get one of these fast chargers, you're probably in for 20, 30 minutes. That'll give you enough charge to get to your destination. So, you know, as you have mentioned, you know, it's not as big a deal for people once they become electric vehicle owners.
Also, people have to understand you don't have to fill the car up, unlike a gasoline car where your modus operandi is either to top it off or to fill it all the way up. You don't have to do that. And at least with Tesla, it tells you how long you have to stay there and charge and how much of a charge you need to get to the next charging station or to your destination. But what about the time? I know you live in California, Ben, and there's a lot of freeways. What about the time? Because if you're not charging at home, if you're on a road trip and you have to stop, it takes 5 minutes to fill a car up with gas.
Yeah.
It's a little longer with an electric vehicle.
Yeah, and it's probably fair to say that this is one of the biggest differentiators between Tesla and basically everyone else. Because with the supercharger network, it's an ideal scenario, right? And you mentioned driving back from DC. I'm sure you pop into a station, you don't have to get an app, you don't have to scan anything, you literally just pop the plug in, you're good to go. And, you know, with one of the challenges that you have in charging them faster and faster is batteries can't handle that much charge, because what happens is when you try to charge them too fast, they build up a lot of heat, and the heat kind of kills the lifespan of the battery. So you don't want to do this too fast because it could cause, you know, big problems with your battery. So there's sort of physics at play here. It's not just we don't want to go faster. So, you know, charging really, really fast is going to be a challenge for a while, but thankfully, like you mentioned earlier, every automaker out there and countries even now are saying we have to go all electric in the next couple decades. So, you know, you have tons of really smart people working on the problem. But for a road trip I do, just as an example, I'm in San Diego, I go back to Phoenix. It's 400 miles or so each way. We stop once in Yuma, Arizona. It's actually quite nice. It's right at the banks of the Colorado River where the Pacific Railway used to end. And my kids get out, they play for 20, 30 minutes, we hop back in the car, and we're good to go. So depending how far you're going, like if you're going 800, 1,000 miles, yeah, you're going to spend a lot of time charging. But even on a 400-mile trip, we spend 15, 20 minutes, you know, maybe 30 minutes if we want to grab a bite to eat. And it's really not that inconvenient overall.
So, Jess, it's all about the size of the batteries. If you, when you're approaching buying a car, is that the most is that the concern that people should you be buying the most battery you can get for your money? Is that should that be the concern?
Personally, I have had people ask me what they should get as far as range, especially if they're looking at a Tesla, which will offer a couple of different trim levels, battery sizes. I always recommend to get as the biggest battery as you possibly can afford. The more range, the better. It just allows you to have peace of mind, if you will. And that, you know, that may be a false statement as well, but, you know, it's we can't deny the fact that people are coming from gas cars that can get hundreds of miles on one tank going to an electric car. So to give them peace of mind, I recommend get the biggest battery that you possibly can, and then you won't really have to think about it.
And everybody, almost everybody, has navigation systems in their cars today, gas cars, electric cars. But at least the Tesla, their navigation system, if you're on a road trip, tells you where you have to stop and how long or how much of a charge you need, as I said, to get to the next charging location or to your destination. But if you don't drive a Tesla, if you drive another brand of an electric car, Jess, how do you do it?
So I believe that a lot of the cars nowadays, even those that are not Tesla, are incorporating that navigation. But there is a fantastic app that I use even with having the Tesla, and that's a Better Route Planner. And you can look at what kind of car that you have, match it up to what they have as far as options, tell it where you want to go, and it will actually map out where your charging locations are along the way.
And as time has gone on since I bought my, almost the day after I bought my car, it's like buying a computer. It was obsolete because almost the day after, the car came down in price and the battery got bigger and therefore the range got longer. Ben, what's the longest, what's the biggest range you can buy an electric car at the moment?
I think Lucid Motors out of Arizona has it right now, 520 miles, I believe. Jess, correct me if I'm wrong. But and you know, the interesting thing there is the guy that is the CEO and one of the, you know, I don't know if he was the founder, but one of the very early people there was one of the chief guys that built the Tesla Model S, but arguably the car that changed the entire auto industry towards electric. So Peter Rawlinson, the CEO there, he knows what he's doing and has all the right people. So their efficiency and their batteries and their powertrains are really second to none right now. Tesla has promised bigger and better things, but we're yet to see it actually on the road. So right now you're looking at 520 miles. Granted, it's a, you know, $150,000 car. So that's where probably the range anxiety is like, yeah, you probably don't need 520 miles. But hey, if you've got the money for it, I mean, you know, there's worse places to spend it.
And you don't need to spend $150,000 to get into an electric car. And in fact, Jess, you can buy a used electric car. But I have a question about that, because used electric cars will have less range than a new one, because usually their batteries are smaller because the technology has advanced in the interim, and also because they lose a little bit of ability to charge over time. So what does that mean for a person who buys an electric car today and wants a new car in 3 years? Will there be resale value for that car?
That's a fantastic question. And there are companies out there such as Recurrent that are studying that I'm in a program with them where they are analyzing our cars and their batteries and try to get an idea of how well their batteries are lasting during the lifetime that we're using them. And they want to take that information to be able to give potential customers more information about cars that they're looking at buying that are used, so that they can make a better decision about what will best fit for their life. So there could be one, but, you know, depending on the area, such as Arizona, where there's a lot of heat, as Ben was saying earlier, batteries don't like heat, and those batteries in those cars could potentially be degraded more in other areas.
The battery is also a big mystery to a lot of people, because these are not what's in your phone. These are not what's in your flashlight. These are not what's in your gas car either. We'll talk about batteries when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Ben Sullivan, a Ben Sullins electric car advocate and YouTuber at bensullins.com. Talks about electric cars and more, much more. Jess Montgomery, president and leader of the Charlotte Electric Auto Association and the Charlotte Tesla Owners Group, and David Borax, our climate reporter, who's been reporting on this for FAQ Cities podcast. With questions about electric vehicles. David Borax is here. So, David, you wanted to chime in on the value of used electric vehicles.
Right. So I think that for a lot of us, used vehicle might be the route into getting a electric car. I've been doing some pricing on it. It's kind of like all used cars right now. You know, you may have to hunt around and prices are up for them. In general, it looks like used electric cars are still pretty pricey, still probably more than the last $23,000 car that I bought. But, you know, a used Tesla is going to be $30,000 at least, and it's going to be 6, 7, 8 years old. And of course, the range won't be as good. You can get something like a used Chevy Bolt for about $22,000. And again, the range won't be the same, but going back to our discussion about that, that may not be your biggest consideration. So used is an option, but, you know, you might be have to be ready for some used car sticker shock.
Let's talk about the batteries, because that's a big mystery to a lot of people. They don't understand what these things actually are. We have a question from somebody who says, if I can't charge it at my apartment, can I bring the battery indoors and plug it in? No, the answer to that is no. It's the whole underside of the car in most cases. But Tesla warranties their battery for 8 years or 100,000 miles. I'm sure other manufacturers are following suit, but they are scheduled to last much longer than that. How long should they last, Ben, and how much degradation should you expect in the battery over its lifetime?
Yeah, those are all great questions. I think, you know, being a data scientist, that's what I look at a lot. And actually, you mentioned Tesla. We do studies here, and we actually present to users their battery health. And in that, you know, we have a fleet of 20,000 or so Teslas that people that are driving it, using it every day. We can see that, you know, we're talking a 20 to 30 year lifespan of these batteries if kept in kind of this optimal charging range. You know, our phones, as an example, you know, drain it all the way down and charge it all the way up almost every day or every day or so, which really puts a lot of strain on the battery. But you want a thin, light, little tiny device. Well, in your car, you actually have a bunch of these little cells. I have a couple of them here if you guys are watching online. These are called 18650 lithium ion battery cells. This is from an old camera piece of equipment. But so they look like regular kind of bigger AAs. And when you keep them in that range of, let's say, you know, not below 20%, not above 80 or 90%, they will go for something like 6,000 cycles. And it only counts as like a partial cycle every time you do that, which means these things are rated for extremely long use. And you can look online. People have Model S's, Model X's, older ones that are plus 400,000 miles. And yeah, the battery, you know, you get maybe 75, 70% of the range that it started out as. But that's still 200 plus miles. And if you were looking to buy a used Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf or something, you know, that's actually really good. And so you're 400,000 miles on a car that isn't used as a daily taxi or something like that. You're talking a lot of years on it. Like the car itself is going to wear out mostly before the battery is. Mm. So I think like that's one thing that people can, if you compare it to your consumer electronics, we're in a different ballgame here. It's a totally different type of technology that's managed. There's thermal heat and cooling. So in the winter, and you know where you guys live, it gets a bit colder than where it is when I live. And so you lose range because it's always trying to keep it at that perfect temperature, which extends the life. So it's not something I would be super concerned about, with exception of maybe the older Nissan Leafs or even the new Nissan Leafs, which are air-cooled, so there's no thermal management in the battery pack. And this is where, you know, they can save a lot of money, but at the same time, the longevity of it isn't as good. So most EVs are set up for a really good, long, useful life.
So, Jess, Tesla recommends you only charge to 80% unless you're going on a road trip, in which case you can charge to 100%, but they want you to get in the car and go right as soon as it hits 100 or as soon after as possible and not let it go down to less than 20%. What about other electric vehicles? What kind of things are they saying about battery health and maintaining the battery's ability to take you where you need to go as long as you need to go?
The consensus, it seems, in other manufacturers is that they'd rather software lock that top end and maybe even the bottom end of the battery so that you think you're charging to 100%, but you're really not. So their approach is, we're going to software lock it and allow the people to use as much of the battery as they possibly can and give them the impression that they're using it all, but in actuality, they're software locking it to try to conserve that degradation.
So they're protecting you on both ends so that you really don't run out of steam. But you ran out of juice yesterday in your Model S, Ben, I'm told. How did that happen?
So I was one of the things that doesn't really exist for electric cars is this concept of a gas can, right? Something that if you run out of gas, you can just fill it up and pop it in, you're good to go. And so I was working with a company that makes these, they call them portable generators. They can power your house if you have a transfer switch and all the right stuff. So there are these big batteries. And so I was driving. I didn't intend to do this, but I was driving to my a friend's house. We were going to test all these batteries, do all this stuff. And not joking, like two blocks, like less than a quarter mile away, and I was pushing it because I hit 0 miles and I had probably 6 or 7 miles left to go. But in my previous testing, like Jess was saying, how it protects you, there's still some more juice there. It'll still give it to you. The car's freaking out, telling you charge, stop. But I'm like, oh, we're fine. And literally just a couple blocks away from my buddy's shop we were going to with these big batteries, it died. I couldn't go. But thankfully, the kind of gas can for your Tesla, your electric car here, did work. And I was able to charge from the battery, the kind of backup battery I had in my trunk. It took maybe 10, 15 minutes because it's not as nearly as high power as one of these big superchargers or these DC fast chargers that you pull into a station of. But, 10, 15 minutes and I was up and I was able to get to his shop where he had a full thing and we were able to go from there.
We're talking electric cars this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Let's talk about this because people have concerns. They don't understand how to charge these things at home, and they have all kinds of questions about that already cropped up. First of all, when you're at home, Jess, I'll ask you this as a Tesla driver and also as an electric car person. Leave it plugged in or let it go down on its own because it will lose charge in the garage unplugged. Should you leave it plugged in?
It's funny you bring that up because during the pandemic, we weren't driving a lot and working from home. I thought, well, why are we leaving the cars plugged in, right? Because with the Tesla, as Ben was saying, it manages the battery temperature. And to do that, if it's plugged in, it is going to use electricity from your grid. So I was essentially paying to, maintain my battery temperature. So we did play around with not leaving them plugged in if we weren't driving. But if we are driving, we will definitely keep them plugged in. I did also hear that plugging it in is good for the 12-volt battery as well. Ah. So that's another reason why I leave it plugged in.
Let's talk about plugging, David, because this is a mystery to a lot of people. You can plug it in to the same outlet that your toaster is plugged into if you want to. It'll just take forever to charge it. What must you have to have a decent amount of charge in a decent amount of time?
Decent. I guess it's all relative. I'm hearing these our fellow Tesla owners here talking about their experiences. I mean, there are three kinds of chargers. There's the level one, which is basically that 120 volt outlet in your house. There's the level two, which is a 240. That's kind of what some of your appliances run on. And then there's the superchargers, fast chargers that you find out there, the Tesla network and that sort of thing. And for that level one charger, plugging it in your garage, it's going to, you just leave it plugged in overnight. So you'll get a partial charge, 6 or 8 hours. I think some models might take a couple of days to get a full charge. But again, it depends on how much you drive and whether that's an issue for you. So if you want to spring for a level two and get that installed, you'll get a faster charge.
Well, let me ask about that, Ben, because the level two, you can have in your garage installed a dryer plug, essentially what is a dryer plug. And that's 240 volts. What's the advantage then of buying a Tesla charger that sits on the wall or another company's charger that sits on the wall over having that, just the 240-volt plug?
It's pretty, I guess, is the answer. At the end, if you have a good-looking garage and you want something, that's nicer looking, it will. I mean, there are minor technical differences, but my garage looks like a giant mess. So I generally, I just have a plug. So, you know, for me, I don't think it's really worth it. They're like I said, little tiny differences, but a dryer outlet is basically all you need. And in fact, if you already have one, there are types of equipment you can go to kind of have a transfer switch between them. And I mean, yeah. You can get by, well, even as David was saying, with a regular 120 volt outlet. I even did a test a couple years back to see if I could go with just a regular outlet, and it worked fine, except for the weekends when we went on longer trips and we used more range. Right. But, you know, I think most people, it's not as big of a concern. The real time that you have to think hard about it is if you don't have a garage or a place to charge at home. That's when you have to think, okay, maybe where I work or somewhere nearby, my grocery store, you know, you have to kind of set up your, like, your own charging infrastructure. Where are you going to charge, when, and whatever.
So the big question that I had before I bought one, and the big question I get from friends who say, oh, you drive an electric car, what's that done to your electric bill? Jess, I have found it has done nothing to my electric bill. Practically nothing.
Really? I can't say that it's done nothing to my electric bill. but since we've been driving electric cars for about 8 years now, and it's on average about, I would say, $1 a day. We have two electric cars, and so you can double that. So it's, you know, I think you brought it up early on the show where you alluded to the fact that it's like a cell phone. And that's how I look at it. It's a cell phone on wheels. You plug it in and, you know, you use it the next day.
And I think electricity costs in North Carolina are around 11 or 12 cents a kilowatt hour. And if you have a 75 or if you have a 100 kilowatt battery, that's 100 kilowatts going into it at 11 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's not that when you compare that to the price of gasoline, even when it's not $5 a gallon, that's a significant savings. Is it not, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah. So this the way I like to think of this is cost per mile. How much does it take you to go 1 mile? And of course, this varies a lot with gas prices and your miles per gallon. But always, like, I've never seen a case where the electric car costs more to go 1 mile. And it also speaks to efficiency. So depending on your rate, and I'm looking, yeah, you're 10.2 cents per kilowatt hour out there in Charlotte. And with that, you're probably looking at about one and a half cents per mile to go in an electric car, like a Tesla Model 3 or one of the more efficient ones. And then, you know, if you break it down in the gas side of it, I don't know what gas prices are out there if you're favorable here and want to make the argument, you know, more against electric cars, you could say it's $3 a gallon and you get 30, 35 miles per gallon. In the end, you're looking at, I don't know, maybe 10 cents per mile, right? Depending on your car. Even if it's 7 cents, if you have a little Honda Civic or something like that, you're still, you know, 5-6 times cheaper to go with an electric car when it comes to fuel. In fact, that's what kicked off my whole YouTube channel was the first year I did an analysis to prove to my wife that it was worth buying. And I found I was saving about 70 to 75% on fuel. And we don't drive much, right? So that was, it wasn't a big dollar amount, but the percentage savings was massive. And that's what really kicked off me doing more and more videos about electric cars on YouTube. So yeah, it's something that if you drive a lot and you live in a place that, you know, you need to be doing that, that's where you're going to see your biggest benefit is saving on your fuel.
So some questions from listeners. Question from Barbara on email. I live in a large 700-person retirement community. Residents have started discussions with our management on long-term planning for a large EV population. They've told us that one of their challenges is that Duke Energy doesn't have the grid to support a large-scale installation of chargers on the property. If that's so, David, it would seem this would be a problem for all high-density developments, condominiums, etc. Is it true, and let me add, can you really own an EV if you live in a place that limits access to your ability to charge? David.
Two questions there. Let me take the second one first. So we answered this in the podcast, the FAQ City podcast here this week. And the answer is that if you want to own an EV and you don't have an easy plug to access to get to, you're going to have to work harder at it. And it's just like Ben said, maybe you charge at work, maybe you charge at the grocery store, maybe you park in your garage there and you get permission somehow to run a long extension cord, although that might be a little dicey. But anyway, but as far as the question about the grid, I mean, it's true that especially here in the US, our charging networks are not built out enough to support the usage of electric vehicles that we're trying to get to. I mean, President Biden wants 50% of all electric vehicle sales by 2030 to be electric vehicles. Right now we're at 2 or 3%. And in order to do that, we really have to be able to support all of those cars. And in general, you know, there's not right now, just like you don't have a 240 plug in your garage, typically, there's not the infrastructure out there to support a row of charging stations.
Will the grid at large, as we transition to electric vehicles more and more, because all these companies say they want to go electric by 2030 or 2040, what has to be done, Ben, to the electric grid at large to support all of this?
Yeah, well, the good news is that we have a grid, and there is infrastructure already in everyone's homes, right? Like David said, if you live in a community without that, that's where it becomes a big challenge. But a lot of states, well, at least out here, we have a thing called curtailments, where we actually have too much energy and don't know what to do with it. Yeah. Or, you know, the thing about electricity is, unless you have a storage solution, and we're talking grid storage, which is a, you know, big billion-dollar projects to store this energy, it kind of comes and goes, right? You can't just, like, put electricity off in the corner of the room and get it later. You have to have a place to store it. So I think grid storage would be a great place where we can kind of expand our ability to handle the load and level out the peak demands. Now, out there in North Carolina, you guys have, you know, coal and nuclear and a lot of other sources. So as we switch to renewables, this becomes a bigger problem. So that's where I think really the grid and what we need to focus on is storage solutions to help us kind of level that out. Because, yeah, right now, if every single person had electric, went home, plugged in, and was pulling 240, 40 amps, yeah, that could be a problem depending on how old it is or whatever. But the overall amount of energy isn't necessarily, like, we have the energy, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Josh wants to know, and I'm going to ask this of you, Jess, because you represent all cars, not just Tesla. If he was to buy an electric car today, which make would be the best choice so that he'll have a good chance of finding compatible charging stations now and in the future?
That's a really good question. I'm inclined to say Tesla at first because it used to be the type of electric car that you can pretty much plug into anywhere. Comes with an adapter so that you can use public charging because Tesla does use proprietary plug. However, there is also Electrify America, which is the other big national charging infrastructure, and they use the combined charging. And I would have to say, you know, you're pretty much good with anything out there. Mustang Mach-E, ID4, either of those would be great.
But Tesla does have its own proprietary network only for Teslas, and they seem to be everywhere as opposed to taking your chances on a public network. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about environmental impact. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Ben Sullins from BenSullins.com, electric car advocate and YouTuber. We're talking about all things technical and freeing the data on a lot of things and making good analyses on what to do if you're trying to change technologies or shift the paradigm here or there. Jess Montgomery's here. He's president of the Charlotte Electric Auto Association. David Borax is our climate reporter at WFAE News. Let's talk about environmental impact because David in North Carolina, Duke Energy, generates power from coal, nuclear, water, wind, solar. I think I've named them all.
Natural gas.
And natural gas, yes. So are you really helping the planet by driving an electric car, or is that completely dependent on your power source, i.e. the electric company, and how they generate their power?
It's a great question. It's one that we hear a lot. I think there's a movement out there that's trying to cast a little bit of a shadow on electric vehicles by suggesting that they're not actually cleaner. And it depends on how you look at it. I mean, if you're talking about the vehicle that you buy off the lot and how environmentally and climate friendly that is, it's true that especially because of the battery production, it may be slightly less climate friendly. But if you calculate it over the life of the vehicle, and let's go all the way to what Ben was suggesting, we could go, you know, a few hundred thousand miles on it, definitely would come out with a better impact on the planet that way. you know, the batteries themselves are an issue, and we're working right now on recycling them. So that, you know, I think that's something, like so many issues with electric vehicles, we are working on that right now. We have bright minds working on it, and we're going to solve
No power source is completely clean, and it really does depend on where you live in terms of how you get your power into that battery. If you live in a coal-fired power plant region, you're not helping all that much. But let's talk about the batteries themselves, because mining lithium, which is the power source in most of these electric car batteries, is messy, shall we say. And then there's the idea of what to do with these batteries once they've outlived their life cycle in the cars. I'm not sure who to ask that question of. Maybe I start by talking about
lithium mining in particular. We have a major lithium mine that is proposed for Gaston County, just west of Charlotte, right. And basically reviving lithium mining in an area where that used to be the world's largest supplier of lithium. So there's a company there that has proposed this mine on about a couple thousand acres, and you know, it's going to be four large pits of 500 feet deep. It's going to, you know, basically really wreck the landscape there. Several streams will be affected. And if you live near there, it's not going to be a pretty sight. And so there's a bit of a not in my backyard movement there, which, you know, if you live there, you would probably be on this team as well. But it is something that's getting us towards this goal of improving, you know, vehicle emissions and getting us towards a better climate future. So in that case, you know, that's kind of a trade-off, right? The trade-off of getting lithium versus the environment, the immediate environment. There's also a fight over a lithium mine going on in Nevada right now.
And one manufacturer just announced, I think it was yesterday, and I think it might be Nissan, but I could be wrong, that they're investigating a cobalt battery. Would there be any economical advantage to switching to cobalt?
Well, that would be the opposite. That would be much more tumultuous or much more controversial, because cobalt and how it's extracted is somewhat of a human rights crisis going on. So on the opposite end of that, Tesla has been talking about for years a cobalt-free battery, because you kind of want to get away from these more precious metals. The harder they are to get, the bigger impact they tend to have, not just on the planet, but, you know, the human cost of it as well, which is very real. So, yeah, you know, ideally we would have batteries that were made for materials that are readily accessible. And there's a lot of companies. I mean, the move to work towards better, greener batteries isn't just an electric car thing, right? If you think about the vast majority of batteries in the world, it's in the thing that you're watching or listening this to on right now. It's your phone, it's your computer, it's your TV. I mean, the batteries are everywhere, right? In construction materials. I mean, everywhere you need these materials. So there is sort of a gold rush. They call it the white gold. And you know, I just heard a podcast from Molly Wood, if you guys are familiar with her, called How We Survive. And she talked about this. She interviewed a bunch of people out here in California. We have a bunch of big projects. You mentioned the Nevada one. There's also the Salton Sea, which is a big thing, where that would actually be kind of a negative carbon impact, because it would be powered by the geothermal brine that's coming up. So it's not always dig a giant pit. In fact, the majority of the lithium right now comes from the Atacama Desert in Chile, which is these big giant fields of this salty brine that get dehydrated down and then processed. So it's much more, and that area is, you know, not like a you're not going to have the NIMBY kind of stuff going on there. It's just a big giant desert, right? So there are ways of getting it, and really the big push isn't just electric cars, but certainly, you know, all the electric things we have are accelerating this. And the good news is that when there's money to be made, we tend to find, you know, solutions to these problems. The question is just, can we do it in a sustainable way that doesn't lead to really, you know, causing more havoc? But overall, as David mentioned about the lifespan of an electric vehicle, the overall emissions and damage you're doing to the greenhouse effect, the actual atmosphere and those kind of things, is much, much less. And if you want more on that, the Union of Concerned Scientists has been studying this for years now, this cradle to grave emissions. So there's a lot of good data out there. And where you guys are at, it would be the equivalent, according to them, of having a 63 miles per gallon gas car. Essentially, like, that's kind of what you would expect in terms of comparing the emissions. It'd be like having an extremely high miles per gallon vehicle. And where I live in California, it would be closer to 87 miles per gallon. Wow. So, you know, you can think of it in those terms of like fuel efficiency and what it does to the environment. overall, we're in a good place.
Let's talk about cost of ownership. These cars have traditionally been expensive to get into. A Lucid is almost impossible to get into unless you're a multimillionaire. But the price is coming down at the Tesla level. And as General Motors jumps into the game and Volkswagen and other Audi, et cetera, get into the game, these prices are dropping to comparable levels to gasoline cars. But then there's the everyday operating cost. Fuel is certainly cheaper. And from my personal experience, I've had a car for 2 years. I have spent precisely, because I keep a spreadsheet on this, Ben, I learned from you. I spent precisely $35 in maintenance Wow. in 2 years. And that was to rotate the tires. There's virtually no maintenance to these cars. Jess, talk about this. I mean, there are many fewer moving parts because there's no combustion engine. There's no transmission.
You're exactly right. It's funny because I had a friend reach out to me and say, you know, I would love to get into an electric vehicle, but they're so expensive. And I said, well, do me a favor. Take your current car and add up all your car payments and then add up all your gas fill-ups and add up all your oil changes and any transmission fluid changes and any other, you know, quote unquote, routine maintenance at 30,000 miles. And, you know, extrapolate that over 5 years and then tell me whether or not it's as expensive as you think it is. And they were shocked at just at the gas alone, how much that they were paying to fill up their car.
And I don't know if this is the same when you get out of a Tesla and into another electric car by another manufacturer, but I rarely touch the brakes. So brake pad changes and brake jobs are kind of a thing of the past. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I don't think I've ever had the brakes changed in any of my cars. I've been driving all electric for 6 years now. And yeah, it's just the thing. You know, you can go 5-6 years without it being an issue at all because of the regenerative braking. When you let off the accelerator, it kicks in and kind of absorbs that kinetic energy, giving you that braking, you know, the slowing down. But it's actually generating electricity. And it's a really fun experience if you're ever driving down a mountain and you see at the end of the trip going down the mountain, you have more miles left than when you started. It's kind of a neat thing. So, yeah, the physics of it, again, here just work so well in electric vehicles' favor that it's kind of unfair. But yeah, it leads to lower cost. I mean, it just is, you know, and this is why electric motors are used in things that, you know, pull planes around and do really big, heavy things because they're just so much more efficient at converting energy into motion.
Well, let's spend 2 seconds on that, because if you watch a lot of these YouTube videos of electric car enthusiasts, they want to concentrate on how fast can it go from 0 to 60, because the torque in these things will put your head in the trunk if you floor the vehicle. And that's how amazing they are. But that's not unless you're a race car driver, that should not be your concern, right?
We're all race car drivers, aren't we?
In Charlotte, yes.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you're pointing that directly at me, Mike, but yeah, I do have a fun job where I get to go test all these things out and do that. It's gotten ridiculous. It has gotten just out of this world how quick you can go in an electric car. I think track driving is a different animal because there's so much more to track driving, but most of us aren't doing that. We're going at the stoplight. I got to get in front of this guy over here and get on the freeway or whatever. And electric cars, again, even like a Chevy Bolt will throw you in the back of your seat. I mean, you don't have to buy a high performance Tesla in order to get that same sensation, right? Which is really cool. And this is one of the things that for people that like driving, you get in an electric car and there's no going back. You know,
I want to spend 2 seconds, Ben, with you for a second, because you spent several YouTube videos and blog posts on the costs of operating these cars in terms of electricity versus gasoline costs. On average, how do they compare? How can people who are considering jumping into this world calculate how driving an electric car versus their gasoline car might impact their pocketbook?
Depending on where you live, it's going to have a big difference, right? Hawaii has very expensive electricity, for example. North Carolina does not. So the cheaper the electricity is, the better the scenario is going to be. Out here in California, when I did my math, I mentioned 70 to 75% savings on fuel. So if you think of how much money you currently spend on gas, just lob that off by you know, somewhere in that ballpark. And the thing about that would be where you live, because gas is probably cheaper than where I live as well. You know, it's going to be a relative kind of scale.
But is there a calculator somewhere out there in the computerverse that you can plug in numbers and make a good comparison, David?
Yes, there are actually calculators all over the internet. You know, I would recommend that people go with a reliable website that's operated by, you know, an auto magazine, or there's one that the U.S. Department of Energy runs. I actually use that for our podcast to do a little check on cars that I'm looking at. I compared a Tesla Model 3 with a Chevy Bolt and a new gas-powered Honda Accord. And I used, and you can plug in your own driving habits, how far you go all at that, and play it out over 15 years. And so if you want to look at it over the life of the vehicle, 15 years, you know, the Tesla came out on top by far.
What about insurance costs? What about insurance costs, Jess? I know that my insurance went up when I bought my car, but it was probably because the car was new and not 11 years old. And it was also because the car was a little more expensive. What about insurance costs?
In my experience, the insurance is really negligible. It's I really haven't seen, if, you know, if there was a jump, to your point, it was probably because they were new cars, but I haven't seen anything that would say it's any different.
And in North Carolina, David, we electric car owners pay an electric vehicle tax every year at registration time. I think it's
120, I think.
120, yeah. Something like that. And that's to offset their loss of revenue from my not buying gasoline to propel the car. There's a gasoline tax that serves the same purpose when you go to the pump. But shouldn't this electric car tax be based on miles driven and not just a flat rate?
That would make it more equivalent to the gasoline tax that you pay, you know,
yes,
how much gas you pump in your tank. Yeah, that would be good. I think we're still so early in the EV ownership era that it's not something that has adjusted to that. And I could see somebody introducing legislation to do that down the road.
So, Jess, some Tesla owners benefit from free supercharging for life. So when they pull up to a supercharger on the road, they don't pay anything. Others have to pay. And if you use an outside, if you have a different car than a Tesla, or if Tesla uses an Electrify America charger, they are paying. How do those rates compare, and how do you know what you're going to pay when you have to stop?
So we just got back from a road trip to and from South Jersey. I'll be honest, I really don't pay too much attention to it. I'm more focused on just getting to where I need to go. And I know that I'm probably going to more than likely pay less than gas. So that's really all I'm too concerned about.
Unless you buy a Tesla, David, there are also tax incentives when you buy an electric vehicle. The federal government puts up $7,500 in tax incentives, but you have to make $7,500 and declare that on your return in order to get that money back. Tesla has sold more cars than other electric vehicle manufacturers, and so they no longer qualify. What impact might that have on people's decision to go forward and buy an electric car?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for electric vehicles right now, and so that's driving a lot of the sales. But according to sales trends across the U.S., places that have incentives have higher sales. So I think a lot of us are still interested in getting some kind of a rebate or a tax credit for it.
And Jess, I only have about a minute and a half left here, but Tesla dominates the culture. This is a question from Redverse on Facebook. What's your thought on more specialized electric vehicle manufacturers like Aptera, or for that matter, any other electric vehicle manufacturer? Because this is new to everybody else.
I think that there's starting to be something out there for everybody. And, you know, you have the big boys with Tesla and GM and Ford. But there's definitely smaller companies that are coming into play. They're offering those niche products for people that fits their livelihood.
Joni on Facebook says, I have a Chevy Bolt. Love it. Just had a battery switch out at no cost. Tesla said a few months ago that it would open its charging network. This is from Phil on Facebook. To all EVs, have they said when? And is that a good thing or a bad thing in 10 seconds or less, Ben?
It's a great thing for the EV movement. They've already begun in Europe and expect it here in the U.S. next year, coming, you know, maybe two.
But that would seem to be a bad thing for Tesla owners.
More electric cars, more electric car sales. All a rising tide lifts all boats.
Ben Sullins at bensullins.com. Really fascinating website for NPR geeks like us. Jess Montgomery, president of the Charlotte Electric Auto Association, and David Borax from WFAE News. Thank you all. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.